Welcome back to Better Vibes. I am Brad, and today's episode, we're diving into the fascinating world of better genetics. That's right, from better genetics, colors, fins, and forms. We're looking to today the science behind why these little fish come in so many colors, fin shapes, and patterns. Understanding genetics not only makes you a better keeper, now say that 10 times fast because I struggled with that one, but it also helps you appreciate the art and science behind better breeding. Let's have a look what is genetics in betters. Genetics is the study of how traits are passed down from parents to offspring. Just like in humans and every other species in the world, it happens. In betters, traits like colours, scale types, and fin form are determined by different combination of genes. Genes not like the ones that you wear, but yes, that's right, the ones that are in all of us, and they are passed down from generation to generation. Just like eye colour or hair types in humans, certain traits are dominant, more likely to show up, while others are recessives. They can stay hidden until paired with another recessive gene. Let's have a look at what goes into the colours of the genetics. Betters have layers of colour cells. Now, please excuse me, I will get these wrong, so please call me out if you wish, but I'm just not the best at pronunciation. So you've got iridophs, melanophs, and iriforphs. Oh, that is terrible. These three main ones create the colour final appearance. Now, if we look into them a little bit more in a basic form instead of those, we've got your standard yellow, red, black, and iridescent layer. Those are the top layers that we generally see. From those, that's where we get all of our blue metallics, our Cambonians, the blacks, the reds, the yellows, the orange, and of course our dragon scales, which are those iridescents. Now, those are many, many different combinations of different things, and it determines everything. Now, the dominant genes often determine the strong, vibrant traits like red or certain metallic sheens. So, your dragon types, for instance, or your straight red traditional ones are your dominant genes. Recessive genes, traits like true blues or some pastel shades, need both parents to carry the genes. So, meaning that if you didn't have a recessive gene in one of those parents, it wouldn't actually come through. The Cambodian pattern, which is a pale body with coloured fins, also known as rimmed in a lot of ones, but technically they are a Cambodian, is a good example of recessive gene types. Fins and forms, this leads us into fins and form genetics. Traits like long fin, veil tail, half moon, and crown tail versus short fin plaquettes are also genetic. Long fin is a dominant trait, so if you cross a long fin with a short fin, so a half moon with a plaquette, many of the fry will show long fins or somewhere in between. More complex fin types like half moon spread or rose tail come from selective breeding and combining multiple genes. So as it is a dominant fin type, they would need to be crossed to another long-finned type of the same to get the same result. Now, the only exception to this is double tails. Now, double tails is a bit of a genetic anomaly. It is not the best genetic trait by rights, meaning that unfortunately with double tails, if you cross double tail to double tail, you will end up with a whole heap of genetic abnormalities, bent backs and fin issues. They may just even have weak immune systems over time, unfortunately. So it is never recommended that you cross a double tail to a double tail. When it comes to selective breeding, the breeders carefully pair betters to strengthen desired traits, whether that is a solid coloration or preferred half moon traits, crown tail types, whatever it may be. Sometimes hidden or recessive genes pop up unexpectedly in the spawn. This is part of the fun and challenge of breeding. And especially when you first start breeding, when we look at these recessive genes, you'll get your first betters. They're male and female, and you'll decide to pair them off. Now, do you know their genetic history? That's going to be a big resounding no, unfortunately, because unless you know the breeder directly and have got the fry from something that's got five generations of breeding from that breeder, you're not going to know what is recessive and what is a dominant gene within that. If you get an imported fish, which majority of the fish here in Australia and probably around the world are actually imported, you're going to know absolutely nothing. So I always recommend, if you are going down the line of breeding your first better pair, ensure that you try to keep similar traits that you can find with similar coloration. That way, you are able to then start gene mapping those fry and understanding what is going to happen. Plus, it also helps stop a lot of bad issues coming through, which we can talk about that for ages, but today we're not going to talk about some of those worst ones that can happen. But responsible breeding is the most important thing when it comes to breeding any fish. We don't want our fish to be overwhelmed by consistently spawning. We don't want them to be hurt or damaged during the process. It is quite a nasty little process sometimes. So taking your time, making sure everything is correct is most important. Also, making sure that our fish are healthy and are in good, well-kept environments, that you're treating them for any diseases that could potentially go into the breeding area before those fish go in there is always good practice as well. So personally, I always give my fish a about a 5-minute methyl blue bath there before they go into the breeding tank, just to ensure that they're not carrying anything on the outside of them, and to give them a little bit of a boost. And they go through that same process when they leave as well. So if there is anything that pops up while they're in there, it is not going to transfer back out into their community tanks if they live in a community tank. But, yeah, responsible breeding keeps lines healthy, avoids deformalities, and promotes natural beauty. So what do I mean by all of this? So healthy lines. So we're talking about making sure that our fish are healthy in general, have strong immune systems, and that they're not carrying recessive genes that could potentially have large deformalities that come from it. As I've mentioned before, bent backs, this is a very big issue. And it's not just with betters, it is with the majority of fish out there. You can get bent backs. Unfortunately, it is part of it. And it's something that we try to avoid. I have a fish that did come out with a bent back. He lives a lovely little solo life. His name is Mr. Wigglesworth, and he is a blue turquoise there, or almost a galaxy blue by rights. And what do I mean by promote natural beauty? Well, we've bred these fish for over 1,000 years to get all these remarkable colours, right? And so what do I, what does, you know, so what is natural beauty? Well, natural beauty is not necessarily always going for a specific coloration or something like that, but more for the correct fin types and good solid colors. This is probably more important to me a lot of the times than a lot of other things. And I guess the probably the main example I can give of this is natural beauty. And we if you take two black dragons, for instance, or any dragon scales, but we'll use black dragons as the example here. If we cross two black dragons together, our likelihood of creating a bad recessive gene into this, which is commonly known as a diamond eye, which is a scale that forms over their eye, unfortunately turning them blind. There can be a procedure to help remove this scale, but it will grow back over time, unfortunately. But if instead of crossing dragon to dragon, for instance, we outcross to a black or a red base, whatever you've got, and then cross back to our dragons again from that fry, this will help ensure that we're not going to create bad recessive genes. And it also creates more natural beauty within the fish. This is, if you're crossing a black dragon, for instance, to a black fish, more often than not, you will probably get samurais and lovely colorations along those lines. May not get those straight black dragons that you're after, but it's all about the fish health in the long term. Now, let's get a bit more of a deep dive into everything here now. That was kind of the welcome intro. I know it was long, but let's have a look at the living rainbow that is the colours that comes from the genetics of the bettas. Now, there's several layers, as I mentioned earlier, with the red, the blue, the yellows, and whatnot, but let's break that down. So your melanomorphs, so these contain your brown and black pigments. These, I'd like to say, you know, with all of these pigments, there is a possibility that some of these pigments are in the majority of the fish that you get. Now, without breeding to, as I said earlier, a similar coloured fish, you would never actually know what recessive genes are potentially there. Then you got your and then we have our erythrophores. These produce the red, orange, and yellow pigmentations. I know it sounds kind of basic, just like the last one, but these make up the majority of the colours through the most of our fish. Now, apart from having solid orange, solid reds, and solid yellow fishes, when we look at certain fish like a koi will have all of those colorations within them, and they are the prime example of the erythromorphs. Okay. Our next layeration. Layeration, is that even a word? Our next layer is the iridophores. That is a terrible word. Who came up with these names? This is the reflective cells that give the metallic blues, greens, and copper sheens. These are what is technically on the upper layer of our coloration, and is what we see the most when we see a reflective fish, those dragon scales, the metallics, the galaxies and things like that. And then we've got the xenomorphs. I am so terrible at this, and I apologise to anybody who I am bastardising the words of these four. Responsible for the yellow coloration. Now, when these layers interact, you get a wide variety of better colours we see. From the example of a fish with strong iridophores but weak erythrophores may look blue or green, while others, while one with strong erythromorphs will add a bright red appearance. Dominant and recessive colorations, that when we look at it, the red is generally a dominant and tends to bleed through in offspring, usually carefully selected against. Why are these carefully selected against? Because it's kind of like a brown fish. A red fish now with a better is kind of the same. Nobody really wants a red fish anymore, unfortunately. Blues and steel blues are part of the same gene system with different variations depending on which combinations of a fish inherits it. The Cambodian, so pale body with coloured fins, is a recessive trait, meaning both parents must carry it for the fry to display it. Marble genes can switch on and off, causing bettas to change pattern over time. A genetic wild card many breeders find both frustrating and exciting. I know when I sell my fry, it's always an interesting one when somebody contacts me a couple of months later, or you're scrolling through Facebook or whatever it is and you see somebody complaining that my fish has changed colour, there must be something wrong. No, this is just marble genes. They do this. Now, this is one of those things that comes with owning a bettor. And it generally means that if they're changing coloration and it's not just paling out, it means a very happy fish is there. So keep that one in mind, guys. Butterfly patterns. So band of colors across the fins are generally a partly genetic but also influenced by selective breeding for symmetry. So when I say selective breeding for symmetry, it's literally both the parents have that exact same colour pattern ration and they're all in that sort of band on that fish, and that's what they're trying to have come through. There's a lot more that goes into breeding better fish than a lot of people think. It's not just chucking two fish in together and hoping that everything comes out. No. It's literally you're selecting the right colours, the right fins, the right shapes, the right body types to go with each other, because, of course, we're not even looking at the size of the fish as well on top of all of this, where we've got our giants, our smalls, and our normal-sized fish. So keep that in mind, okay? The fins and forms, let's have a look into the genetics of the fins and forms a little bit deeper. We're not going to go super deep on all of this, but we will keep having a squizzy through it all. So the fins and forms, the variety of bettor fins is another area where genetics shine. Different fin types are controlled by specific genes, sometimes with multiple genes interacting. Short fin versus their long fin friends. The plaquette, the short fin, is the original wild form. That's why they have the Thai word plaquette, which literally translates, I believe, to short fin. Correct me if I'm wrong. The long fin trait is dominant. So crossing a long fin and a short fin, as I mentioned earlier, usually will result in probably about a 75% chance that... a 75% fry outcome will be long fin versus 25% being short fin. Not a good 50-50 split, like you would assume, because the short fin is a recessive gene. However, some genetic genes influence fin length differently. So you may see plaquettes popping up with long fin spawns in parents carrying the gene. if you really, really want to be very, very technical, there is a recessive gene of a plaquette in every single beta because that is where it comes from. Now, how much that gene is there is always extremely hard to calculate because of how far and how long it's been from the wild and how long it's been bred. So it could be that it's there in a long fin variety, but you may not see it until it randomly pops up and you get 5 fry out of 100 or something like that that come out of your spawn from half moon to half moon. Let's have a look at actual fin shapes in their specifications. Okay. So, of course, we all know what a veil tail is, don't we? This is probably one of the most common fin types, generally. When we're talking about it, a veil tail, of course, is that long club or spade type that is coming off the tail fin of the fish. It is a genetic dominant trait. When bred with other types, veil tail traits often appear more strongly. So even if you put that over to a half moon, which is another dominant trait, you will find that you'll probably get a slightly wider spread of the tail, but it will still have that veil tail shape. Half moons require selective breeding for that 180 degree spread of the tail. This is where we get delta tails, which is less than 100 degrees, and your rose tail, full suns, and feather tails, they're slightly different, but full sun is past 180 degrees. So if we're not selectively breeding for that perfect 180 trait, technically it doesn't fall under the international guidelines. And The trait for the half moon is polygenetic, meaning multiple genes are involved. So it does appear reliably, unless it's carefully line bred. Crown tails are the reduction in webbing between the rays of the fins. They kind of look like spikes. That's why my crown tail is known as Vlad the Destroyer. Or the Impaler, sorry. Vlad the Impaler. Yes, just like our history guy out there. This is a dominant trait, but there is a degree of ray reduction that can vary. So I recently crossed crown tail to crown tail, of course, and length and ray reduction within those fries vary immensely. Also carrying everything from the double crown to king crown to single crown spawn within that same trait, which is incredible. Now, the double tail trait is a recessive gene, and double tail, what do I mean by double tail before we go too far? Double tail is the tail fin that kind of looks like a love heart almost, the top of the love heart, where it is literally two separate almost looking tails. This is a split in the caudal fin, and it is a recessive gene. Both parents must carry the gene for it to show, but every single tail carriers often show wider dorsal and shorter body. And this is why I was saying that you should never actually cross double tail to double tail, because now we're shorting up the bodies and we're widening the dorsal fins and things like that. That is not good selective breeding, okay? We want to make sure that we don't go shortening up bodies. This can cause internal issues, including a lot more bloat and other bad issues like bent backs as well. Rose tails and feather tails is an extreme form of the half moon created by overbranching of rays. It's like somebody kind of threw the dice and ended up with a Uno card that they didn't really want. This is not a single gene, but a result of selective breeding through. It can be sometimes cause deformities if pushed too far. So This is another thing. So how far can we get our feather tails or rose tails to go before we have issues? It is always best, as I was talking about earlier, with like dragon type fish, to outcross every now and again so that we don't inherently go too far and cause natural issues. Form influences health. Long fins are beautiful but put more strain on the fish, while plaquettes are closer to the natural form and often hardier. They've got a greater movement. The plaquettes have a greater movement around the tank. They are faster, they are zippier, they usually have a longer health and lifespan. When I look at half moons, for instance, rose tails, feather tails, Dumbo ears especially, it's like you running or even just walking down the road into a wind that's coming into your face while you're wearing one of those runner's parachutes, okay? Now, if you had to do that all day, every day, you would be completely exhausted all the time. This is why we don't see our long fin varieties move around as much as we do the plaquette varieties. It's a lot more on their body. It is like having an exercise 24/7, okay? So we really need to keep an eye on that and make sure that our fin types are going out of balance. And we're also not putting those large fin types into massive tanks or with fish that are going to be a bit more aggressive, that are faster than them, because they can't get away. Double tail bettas can be a stunning fish, but are prone to spinal deformalities and other issues if bred irresponsibly. As I was saying earlier, shorter bodies, issues with bloating and things like that, spinal deformalities, they're a huge choice, huge issue. Overall, genetics is like a puzzle. Some traits are controlled by single genes, but mostly influenced by multiple genes working together, plus the breeder's choice over the generations. Okay, let's have a look at some colorations. So let's imagine that you're breeding two different bettas of two different colors. First example would be a red cross blue. So our red is generally a dominant trait, where the blue is a recessive. If you cross a strong red betta, so a full red, with a blue one, doesn't matter if it's full blue, has a helmet or anything else like that, many of the fry will show more red tones, so probably a 75-25 split again, then the blue tones will. But if both parents carry the blue gene and you're unaware of a recessive blue, you might see more fry pop out as blues or purples, depending on the iridoph layers or the iridescent layers, okay? Now let's have another example here of a Cambodian versus red. So Cambodian, clear or white body with a rimmed coloured in its fin, versus a red. The Cambodia is a recessive gene again. So if only one parent carries the Cambodian gene, you won't see any fry with that trait. That trait is then hidden. But if both parents carry the Cambodian gene, then you'll start to see those pale-bodied, bright-finned beauties appear, of course. Now, when we go look at marble bettas, so marble bettas are, of course, your Kois, your Dragons, your Galaxies, and all those lovely ones. Well, this is a crapshoot at the best of times. It is your wild card. Everything in here is literally who knows. Even if you think you know what colours are going to come out, guaranteed they will come out as something different. And it is the essential breeder's joke of expect the unexpected with marbles. You just never know. You think you've got two red Kois? Well, no, No, you're going to get yellow koi's or blue koi's or something weird like cellophanes and who knows what else from it, okay? But overall, I'm going to wrap it up there. That's pretty long show there today. I hope that you've got a little bit more understanding, a little bit more from it. Now, if, of course, you want to know more about genetics, of course, just Google Better Genetics. There is an amazing guy from in Europe who does a lot more on genetics and has a great YouTube channel. This YouTube channel, of course, is Better Territory. You can have a look at his spawns, his outcomes, and learn and understand a lot more about the better genetics and where I got a lot of my information from. All right. So, yeah, have a look at that. But think of better genetics like rolling dice. Some traits are more likely than others. But with recessive genes, you need the right combination from both parents for them to have the appearance. That's why breeders plan generations ahead using Punkett square style predictions to shape their lines. If you want to understand what this is, it's like Sudoku in some ways. It's a 9-square box and it's a little bit to get your head around, but that's where we put a lot of our time to try to understand what is going to come out. All right, but thank you for tuning in today, and I hope you've learned something. Understanding the better genetics is a lot when it comes into things. This is just a short trip into the very long and depthy world of genetics, full stop. So let's remember that there's a lot more that goes into our little friends than what we ever expected. And I hope to see you out in the wild with betters. So thank you for tuning in to Better Vibes. I'm Brad. I hope you have a lovely week, and I'll hope to hear from you soon.